the key is that when you have your core values or your true wealth intact, what happens is that putting together your plans and your life becomes so much easier.
Welcome to the One Person Business Podcast, the show for solopreneurs, consultants, and contractors who are ready to take charge of their business and reclaim their freedom. Join us as we bring you inspiring stories, invaluable insights, and practical strategies from successful solopreneurs and industry experts, empowering you to create a thriving business that aligns with your unique goals and allows you to live life on your own terms. Here are your hosts, Joe Randall and Carly Reese.
Welcome to the One Person Business Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Carly Reese.
And I'm Joe Rando.
And Joe, you and I, we talked to solopreneurs quite a bit about like why it took them a little bit to jump into solopreneurship, some hesitations they had. And something I hear time and time again, aside from marketing, which is a whole other thing, that people struggled with was just leaving their employer-sponsored retirement plans. I think that's a big deal for people. People don't really know where to start or where to go for financial planning because they're leaving that big company or small company, but kind of that net that they had before. So we wanted to have our guest today, Deborah Shatsky, on because she's going to walk us through all of this. So if you're in this boat, you're on the right show, you've come to the right place. She is the founder of the consulting and registered investment advisory company, BPP Wealth Solutions, LLC. And Deborah, this is one of my favorite stories, and I think what makes you so relatable and why we're excited to have you on, because Deborah grew up understanding the importance of financial planning and wealth management in a very personal way. Growing up, she would walk through the supermarket, gripping her mom's hand, hoping they'd be able to afford their groceries. Her mom overcame her challenges, going on to work for The Guardian, specializing in the design and implementation of pension plans. And this is so cool, was impressively named their first man of the year, which is just so cool. And I love that you have that story to learn from and to follow in her footsteps. Today, she's an independent advocate for her clients, and her work is integral to ensuring all BPP clients receive the planning and advisory services they need to grow their futures. She cares about her clients deeply and about their families, their businesses, and their futures. Deborah, I feel like you fit in so well to our audience, so welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's such a pleasure to be with you, Carly and Joe. Thank you for having me on. It's a privilege.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, this is going to be so great. And I actually want to piggyback off of what I said, that people are hesitant to jump into the one-person business space because they're leaving the employer-sponsored benefit plans. So for people in that position, what would you say should be the first thing they should do when going solo?
The first thing anybody should do, in I think doing most things in life, is have a plan. You know, before you go solo, it is so powerful to sit down with a professional. You can get a lot of good services all over the place. There's professionals that will do a plan and they'll budget for you. They'll tell you what you need to make, how much you should be putting or a goal is to put away. And here are the different ways you can do it. It's very scary going solo. It's one of the scariest things that we ever do. But when you have an actual plan, it makes it easier because you can actually have something to follow.
So how do people go about putting that plan in place? I know for me, luckily my dad's a financial advisor. So I kind of like jumping solo, I was like, okay, I have some guidance, but I have a lot of friends that are like, I don't even know where to start. So where should they start?
Well, I think
put that plan.
Well, I think the CFP network is a great place to find a planner. Let's start there. And the reason that we love that is because most of the CFPs actually are skilled in different areas of planning. But how you start a plan is really just put together what your expenses are. It's easier to start with your expenses, especially when you're going solo, because you're not necessarily sure of what your income is. And putting in retirement plans is easy, whether it's an IRA or whether it's your solo 401k, whether it's a SEP. There are a lot of retirement plans that do make it easy for people to automatically start saving when they feel that they have the ability to do that. But having a plan is really the key, I think, to everything.
That is so true. And it's so funny. You're talking about like tracking expenses and you don't always know your income. And so retirement aside for right now, let's just get back to the day-to-day, because I feel like that's huge too. Like, how do people know what they can and can't afford? I know that when I was working for a company, it's like, oh, I know I'm making this amount of money, so I'm going to go grab my Starbucks and I'm going to go do this. This podcast is not sponsored by Starbucks, by the way. but I'm going to go get this. And it was just so easy. And then I know that when I first started being a solopreneur, I was like, oh, wait, should I get my cup of coffee here? Like, or should I make it at home? Which you should probably do anyway. But how do they know what they can and can't afford?
Well, that's why I say you start with your expenses. It's so much easier to start that way because you have them. You already know what your basic costs are. What are you spending for your rent or your mortgage or your car and all the different things that you're already doing? So if you can actually just simply outline, and we have a program that we use that makes it easy for people to put in to the program, actually all of their expenses, whether it's taking the charge cards and just allocating it to the different categories. But start with your expenses, and expenses include your savings. Expenses include savings not only for retirement, but travel. Expenses include if you want a Starbucks, maybe you put in having a Starbucks every day, but then you see that your cash flow isn't keeping up with what you want your expenses to be, but at least you can start somewhere. And I always tell people that it's better to start with a good budget, meaning one that allows you to do what you want to do, and then figure out what the income you need to fulfill that is, than to start skimpy and then try to grow it from there. Because if you're filling up your buckets of what you want, it's just much more satisfying. And if you can't do it, you have to know where you can cut. So if you have a budget, this is what I want. This is what the necessities are. Then at least you have the ability to figure out what it is that you're going to do.
Hey, can I get a clarification too on kind of what we talked about a minute ago? And it flows into this and I think the rest of the conversation. But you said something about CFP, someplace to go to find a certified financial planner. What was it? CFP?
Yeah, the CFP
Central
Network. So if you go into the CFP, Certified Financial Planning Network, it will actually give you financial planners in different communities that you can find. And then you can reach out to them and interview them. And I will tell you, after you speak to a couple of them, you'll know who you want to work with.
There's something, and I don't know the details of this, and why I want to ask you, because I'm sure you do. So there are some people that work in this industry of helping advise you on investing in finances that are fiduciaries, meaning they are obligated legally to have your best interests at heart, and some aren't. And how do people tell the difference? Obviously, I think you kind of want to work with people that have your best interests at heart. That's kind of where I come down anyway. How do they determine that? Are all CFPs fiduciaries,
yep,
or is that?
That's why
variable?
I said to go to a CFP. You cannot, you know, CFP is like having a CPA. You cannot be a CPA or CFP and not be a fiduciary. You are really run by the bylaws of our certificates, and you need to keep up with a lot of planning every year. You have to do a lot of continuing education. And you have to run your business always with the best interest of the client first.
That reminds me of our realtor versus real estate agent conversation.
That's a little more branding.
You always
correct me. That's a little more branding. Yeah, but that's a little different because they're both doing the same job. It's just a realtor has a designation. I don't know if it's training or something, but it's kind of a trademarked. And that reminds me of one of our previous podcasts. It's a trademark term that you cannot use if you're not a realtor. But anyway. Moving on.
We digress.
The difference with a CFP is CFP is it's a hard exam. I mean, people who are CFPs actually studied hard to make sure that they know what planning is, what budgeting is, what cash flow is, what taxes are, what, you know, pension plans are, the type of pension plans, the type of insurance policies, different investments, different but even going to property and casualty, what the laws are on estate planning. So the CFP program is very involved. And to get a CFP, like I said, is not an easy task. And to keep your CFP, you have a lot of continuing education you have to do each year. So that's what provides us with the ability to be fiduciaries, is because we're constantly training and keeping ourselves fit.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Well, so I want to, we were talking about expenses before this, but those were great questions. And I would assume a lot of places where people have their downfalls is not tracking expenses and just not having that budget. But I feel like one of the best ways to learn is to learn not what not to do. So in your experience with your clients, what are some other mistakes you see people make that you would advise against, so that people, it may not be second nature for people?
Having too many charge cards. I mean, you should really have two, a business and a personal. You know, it's, you should not really have a lot of charge cards, because people already don't track what they spend. It just makes it easier. The easier you make your life in tracking what you're doing, the better it is. So I would say you need to absolutely make your life simple. Use only a couple charge cards. Same thing with accounts. People have things all over the place. You know, I can't tell you how many times we pick up people's statements and they worked at this firm and that firm, and they have, they're in 401ks and places all over the place. It's important to, for us all, to consolidate what we have and to streamline our method of operating. So bank accounts don't have many different accounts. The faster and better we are at organizing ourselves, the better it is that we can actually see our progress or lack of.
Yeah, fair point.
So, but I just want to extend what you said. So when you have as few accounts as possible, you have a personal checking and a business checking, personal savings, business savings. Don't mix those. Just, you know, like you said, with the credit cards. But yeah, that's such good advice, because it gets so messy if you don't separate those.
It really does. And it becomes so overwhelming. It's hard enough to have your own business. I mean, it really is a big job to have a business. The reason we do it is because we want to control our future. That's how most of us do it.
No, that's so true. Well, and to piggyback off of that, like everybody, the audience that we try to target aren't people that are like, let's get rich, like in the morning in our pajamas and blah, blah, blah. Like we try to cater to lifestyle solopreneurs. People, like for me, I like being able to take my kids to school and I like things like that. Like it's just a lifestyle thing. And it's funny, we were talking about simplifying it. I feel like that ties into lifestyle so perfectly. Like, who wants a complicated lifestyle? And my question for you is, you talk about true wealth in a lot of your content. And I'm curious, it sounds like that fits into this conversation, but what is and how can that be measured?
It's really amazing. Since we started practicing the true wealth, the impact that it's had in our family and all the families that we're working with, because it really taps into what are the core values that you want your kids, your grandkids to really know about you, that who are you? You know, for us, you know, education is important. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean that they have to go to Harvard or Princeton? No, it means that we really recommend when anybody in our family is trying to do something, we ask them to look where they can find who's doing it really well and learn from them. Is there a class? Is there a lecture? Are there podcasts? You know, it's so important that you identify, if you say education is important, and then you expand on that. So education as a true wealth, family first, for many of the families that we're working with, including ours. But you have to, the key is that when you have your core values or your true wealth intact, what happens is that putting together your plans and your life becomes so much easier. Because if you're saying that family's first and smart spending, education, fun and adventure, you know, people have different core values. When you identify what the core values are, then it's really easy to talk about true wealth, because then you start to live your life planning to make sure that you are actually in line with what you say your true values are. So if I'm saying that family comes first, then how am I spending my week? Am I working 80 and 100 hours a week? Or am I doing what you said, where, you know what, I make sure that in my schedule first I always put William's school schedule in my calendar. I always make sure any games, any things are in there because I want to go to those. And I think that if we plan well and we have our core or our true north, our values in line with our planning, it's amazing what happens.
This ties so incredibly well to kind of where we're coming from. It's like right in line.
Did we pick her to say this?
Well, Carly and I created something called the Solopreneur Success Cycle, and it starts step zero, goals. You know, what's important to you? Why are you doing this? And then we keep circling back to those. Every time you make a change or think about changing something or evaluate how it's going, looking back at those. So this is really cool. Yep.
Yeah, I love this. Well, and were you going to say something different?
I'm so glad that you guys did that because it's really I will say it's the best way.
No, it totally is. Well, and you actually put a pin to this too, because in your book, Chaos to Joy, you tell stories of women facing financial crisis and how they can get out of it using your security income planning, which I want to talk about in a second, but how they moved into living a life of happiness and financial success, which is everything we're talking about. Could you give a little preview into this book and tell us one of those stories and how it might apply to solopreneurs?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it was really interesting because I have so many fabulous clients. I started, this book is all women. The next one will be all men. So Chaos to Joy is a book of five amazing women that really had awful situations and didn't know how to do it. And miraculously, they were referred to us. So we started at the beginning with them. And like you, we start with what their dreams are. We don't do goals only because goals are too simple. I really try to push them to dreams because if I can get them to start talking about something actually beyond what they would normally talk about, it's amazing what we find out people want to do. And then we really do a cash flow analysis, which is so critical to finding out what their cash flow and what they can afford. And in all of these situations, the one that I'll talk about is Michelle. Michelle came to us and she said, you know, well, Michelle came to us. Michelle's was part of a company. It wasn't a solopreneurship, but it was a company that was already operating that her husband owned. And her husband at age 50 had a coronary and that was it. And they had three kids and she really didn't work. And all of a sudden now she was the owner with her mother-in-law, believe it or not, of a company and had no clue what to do. I mean, it was truly devastating. The president, thank God, was my client. It was my client for years and said to Michelle, please call Deborah. I promise you, she will walk you and help you through this. And when I met with Michelle, it turned out her husband actually knew he was going to die. And so he went on a spending spree like you couldn't believe. Bought really fancy cars. He bought a boat. He bought, you know, he just really went off. And she knew that he was off the rails. She didn't know what to do with it. And they were fighting like crazy because he didn't tell her. He knew that he had a problem. So unfortunately, she was saddled with not only her husband being gone, but now all this new debt. She thought she was going to get this life insurance policy from the company, and he racked up so much debt that the death benefit of the life insurance actually went to the company to pay off the debt. So you can't design a worse situation, I don't think, not many. So we worked out, I wound up spending a lot of time with her. We worked out, again, what her cash flow was. And with somebody like that, goals is not even part of the agenda because you're in disaster planning at this point. And so what we did is I did her cash flow. I was able to, she brought everything that she could find, put it together. And then I called her, I called the president of the company and I said, this is the salary we need in order to cover what she needs. Pay her bills, to pay back debt, to save money, to put money away in a retirement plan, pay her kids' education bills, and to be able to survive. Can the company afford this? Now, in her situation, she was lucky that the company could afford it. In other situations, that's not the case. But just the relief of her knowing that the company could afford to pay her, and she decided to go to work because they can't pay her proper. You can't get paid, otherwise it's a dividend, unless she goes to work. So she went to work, and we created a role for her. We did some testing and created a role for her that she would be really good at. And she started to work, and she started to pay off the debt, and she started to get really unbelievable confidence about the business. She knew about the business. It's been a family business forever, but she never worked in the business. And all of a sudden, she started really moving forward and getting into an incredible momentum of being a vital part of the business. And it was incredible to watch. And it only came about because, you know, that would have gone, the business would have gone out of business. I mean, when you think about what would have happened without the proper intervention of a good planner, it would have been, the company would have been out, the employees would have lost their jobs, she would have had much less money, much less. And instead, we wound up working through her issues. It did take us a couple years. I'm not going to say it was easy, but we just kept moving forward and doing everything we could to make sure we were paying attention to what was critical. And she got out of it, so much so that her goal was 10 years after the death of her husband that she'd be able to retire. That private equity firm came in 6 months before and bought the company. So she retired.
Oh my gosh.
Just
How
saying.
Amazing. You sounded like you have had a plan in place to get her out of this situation. And you have a proprietary process called security income planning. Did that factor into this, or what is that exactly?
Well, that's always what it is. We don't do anything for anybody unless we do a security income plan for them. And the reason being is because, you know, when I ran accounting firm, wealth management and financial services divisions, it became really clear to me, no matter how rich or not somebody was, that if they're clear about their cash flow and the vulnerability of the cash flow, it's really amazing. So I created this system where you start off first with your goals, dreams. We push them, like I said, to dreams. Then to do an honest accounting of your finance. You know, and I mean honest. We get the tax returns, we make sure the charge card statements are in line with what they say they're spending. Because some people spend, you know, a lot more on clothes than they say they'll spend, or, you know, there's always something. So, you know,
Starbucks.
Yeah, Starbucks. I mean, you just don't realize that, Joe, you're right. You know, Starbucks, it adds up. And so we get an analysis of really what they have. And then based on that, we put in their income, we get their paychecks, we get everything that we need to show them where they actually are. And for some clients, they can't even figure out how to do it. So we just have them send us all of the stuff and we'll input it. For most clients, they're getting better at figuring it out, but we still get a copy of the charge cards and the other stuff just to make sure. Once we get their cash flow done, then we look at their investments. Because, you know, unfortunately, one of my big projects at one of the firms was to, I went around to, when I joined the firm, they had a lot of Madoff clients before Madoff fell apart. And one of my jobs, I went around to all of the clients to tell them that I was concerned about with the percentage of investments in Madoff, not because I knew it was going to be a disaster, but because I knew the percentage was way too much. They couldn't afford to lose it. So if you're invested in one thing like that and you can't download the investments, it's private equity or hedge fund, you need to know that if you lose it, you're okay. So we do a really good deep dive of people's investments. And if they're not good, we'll tell them why we don't think they're appropriate based on their cash flow. We're not, you know, a lot of people don't have Madoff investments. I just want to be clear about that. I was just saying.
I have to ask a question, though, about that, because it's so interesting. When you told them about that, were any of them able to get out of that investment?
All of them told me the same thing. They all said, you don't know, this is Madoff. And I said, I will tell you, my education tells me that if you can't download the statements and I can't, there were Excel spreadsheets and I can't figure out how the returns are being, how they're coming up with the returns, then I have to warn you that I'm concerned that if you lose it, you won't be able to pay your bills. And all I care about is the vulnerability of your cash flow. You know, not knowing anything else. So that was really it. So with most investments, and a lot of our clients have hedge funds, I'm fine with hedge funds. I just want to make sure that they understand the vulnerability of any of their investments. And how is that cash flow going to protect their future? Because their cash flow is what they rely on. You know, most people don't have trust funds. Let's just be honest. And even if you have a trust fund, you still need to know what the vulnerability is of that cash flow. So the second thing we do is review the investments. So we do an analysis of the quality of the investments. There's a lot of programs that you can easily do this. And then once we finish their investments, we go over their insurances, and then we go over their documents. And it amazes me how many people don't have signed wills, don't have signed durable power of attorneys, don't have signed healthcare proxies. And the reason being is because I believe that a lot of attorneys don't push clients to sign things. They draft them, but they don't push them. And so as a part of the security income planning, which is all about building, protecting, preserving wealth for generations, which is what BPP is, build, protect, preserve, we make sure that we're doing that. So we're constantly closing the circle, building your cash flow, your investments, protecting your insurances, preserving your documents, and making sure all your everything is aligned and in good order. So that's how I developed security income plan, to have a process that was reliable, to really, because of what I saw people go through and the fear, to stop that. We have so many tools, we have so much skill, and we have so many professionals that are good. Just let's work together and make people's lives easier.
Perfect segue into our second to last question, which just blows my mind. I feel like we could talk about this all day.
We could.
Right? you spend your life helping people find financial success. So we have to ask you, what is your favorite quote about success?
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about it, and, you know, there's so many great quotes. But for me, I think the biggest quote is one that I say to everybody: to dream big, create a plan, find your team, and make it happen. You know, it's, life is so short. I mean, you know, I forget who it was that said, you know, don't wait till you're 65 before you start doing your planning. You know, really, it's, life is so short, and priority of time is really one of the only things that we have control over, you know, at least I think. And it really makes a difference when you actually put a plan in line with the priority of your time. And so, and then you, then the money and everything else. So that's what I would say. That would be my quote.
I want to be respectful of your time, like I said, we could keep going. But Joe, she's having a little get together with her bestie today, and so I want to make sure that she has time to go hang out with her after this. but Deborah, where can people find you if they want to learn more or give you a call?
It's really simple. It's our website is www.bppwell, B as in build, P as in protect, P as in preserve, wealth.com. And our website will allow you to see what we do, learn about us, learn about my team. I happen to have a phenomenally brilliant team. It happens to be all women. That's not always the case, but my team is all unbelievably brilliant women, and that's the easiest way to find us.
We're just so happy you joined us today. This has been so beneficial for me personally. I think our audience will feel the same.
Well, thank you so much. It really was.
Thank you, Deborah. This was great.
Yeah, come back anytime.
Take care.
And listeners, thank you so much for tuning in today. We will see you next week on another episode of the One Person Business Podcast. See you soon.
You may be going solo in business, but that doesn't mean you're alone. In fact, millions of people are in your shoes, running a one-person business and figuring it out as they go. So why not connect with them and learn from each other's successes and failures? At LifeStar, we're creating a one-person business community where you can go to meet and get advice from other solopreneurs. Be sure to join in on the conversations at community.lifestar.com. That's community.lifestar with two R's.com.